Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. Since this is Tax Day, we'll begin with the country's leading expert on taxation, the author of the bestsellers Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, former New York Times Pulitzer Prize winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston. He joins us to explain who pays their taxes and who doesn't, and how the super rich and big corporations get away with it. Then, with today's announcement that the United States' debt is being downgraded from stable to negative, we'll be joined in the studio by financial journalist and former Wall Street banker William Cohan, the author of a brand new book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. We will talk about the two economies and the two Americas, one Wall Street that is thriving and the other Main Street that is languishing. Then finally, we'll investigate the biggest killer in America, responsible for more deaths than all other causes combined, sugar and high fructose corn syrup. Gary Taubes, the author of the New York Times Magazine cover story, Is Sugar Toxic?, joins us to explain how the biggest killer in America gets away with murder. I'm now joined by David K. Johnston, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter formerly with the New York Times. He teaches at Syracuse University's College of Law and writes columns for Tax Notes and The Nation and has uncovered so many tax dodges that he's been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States. He's the author of the best-selling books Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. Welcome to Background Briefing on Tax Deadline Day, David K. Johnston.
Well, Ian, thank you for having me. I don't think I'm the leading expert, maybe among journalists, but not experts, period, on taxes, however.
Well, in terms of the popular consciousness, you make the greatest contribution, because the whole point of this debate is that it's not a debate, that the rich are getting away with absolute highway robbery, and the public, the broad public, somehow just don't understand what's going on. So
well,
that's
what I agree with you about. I mean, there's a real fundamental problem that the public has said, oh, this is boring or hard to understand, I don't want to think about it, and they've been sold this incredible bill of goods, and luckily, we should be grateful for Congressman Ryan of Wisconsin with his new plan. I'll tell you why. Because that plan makes it very clear, anybody can understand what the right wing of the Republican Party's vision is for America and what they see as the biggest problem we have and the solution. And the problem that Mr. Ryan sees is the rich do not have nearly enough, and the solution to that problem is to take from the disabled, the elderly, the sick, and children, so the rich can have more. And his plan is absolutely clear about that. And if you're middle class and under 55, the plan is, when you get old, to take from you, too, so the rich can have even more.
Well, David K. Johnston, do you think, though, that the public will wake up before this plan is implemented? Because I don't see a lot of pushback from the Democrats. I don't see a narrative. I don't hear a narrative. The president did make a speech last week that seemed to be beginning to at least engage in this debate. But what gives you the feeling that somehow Ryan and the right-wing Republicans have crossed the line and gone too far?
Well, the polls, a number of things are happening. Today, several Republican senators, including Marco Rubio from Florida, a few days ago, I've forgotten the name of the senator who was critical of Grover Norquist. Some Republican senators have begun to say, you know, we may have to raise taxes. And this has been Grover Norquist. You must never, if you're a Republican, ever speak in favor of raising taxes anywhere at any time. Secondly, the polls are showing overwhelmingly that the public says the highest income Americans need to be paying more taxes. And there's a significant amount of polling that says they think middle-class Americans may need to pay somewhat more in taxes. But most importantly, what's happened with the Ryan plan is all the bad things I've been writing about for many years and other people have been writing about, they're all kind of wonky. You got to really dig in and understand technical stuff. The Ryan plan, there's nothing technical about it. We want the top tax rate to go from 35% to 25%. That's a virtual one-third reduction. If you were paying $10 million in taxes, you'd pay about $7 million in taxes under his plan. And then he wants to take from the elderly, the sick, that whole list that I read. As President Obama actually put it quite clearly the other day, the Ryan plan is, I, President Obama, rich guy, get a $200,000 tax cut paid for by taking $6,600 from each of 34 old people who are sick. And I think it's become very starkly clear. You combine that with the Wisconsin situation. And I think we're at a real turning point. We are either on our way to becoming a complete corporate vassal as a nation, or we're going to see the trend of the last 30 years start to wane, and we're going to head back toward an idea of an America for everybody, not just the those at the top.
Well, David K. Johnson, when you talk about this trend that's been going on, I guess, since Reagan, I think that's at the heart of this mean-spirited social Darwinism that Ryan has come up with, and that is the strategy to lock in the redistribution of wealth so that the bulk of public money from middle-class and working Americans' taxes is transferred into private hands. And the amazing thing is, to my mind, is that no other democracy operates this way, with citizens paying their taxes but having their services cut while subsidizing the rich and private corporations.
Well, or not with a lot of pushback. I mean, when Margaret Thatcher tried to go and do a full Milton Friedman with the poll tax, you know, there were riots in the streets about it, and she had to back off somewhat from that. You know,
but they had free health care and six-week vacation like all the other Europeans have. They've got so much more than we have. I mean, the OECD has just come out with a report that the United States currently ranks 34th out of 34 members of the OECD, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, in regards to spending on social programs. Currently, only 7.2% of our GDP goes on programs that make up our social contract with the American people. That's compared to, right next door, 26% with the Canadians. And the Germans, who have one of the healthiest economies in the world, 21% of their GDP on social programs. So we're already disadvantaged compared to the rest of the world, and they want to cut more.
Well, no, Ian, I'm not disagreeing with you that about any of those facts. My point is simply that I think that the Ryan plan is so blatant that anybody can get it, that you don't have, you can be somebody who, you know, just has a nodding acquaintance with public finance, and you can get this, you can see what this is, as opposed to, you know, all the subtle tax tricks rich people put in, get put in the tax code, and people can say, well, you can't do anything about that, that's rich people. But here, Ryan's plan is just so blatant and simple that you can see this is more redistribution to the top. And if the Ryan plan comes under attack using the language I just used with you, that the right wing of the Republican Party has identified America's major problem, the rich don't have nearly enough, and we need to get them more, we need to take it from the old, the sick, the disabled, and from children, I think people will wake up to that. Now, I could be wrong. We may be so far gone towards worshiping the corporate form and worshiping people based not on the content of their character but the contents of their wallet that we're doomed.
Well, again, I'm speaking with David K. Johnson, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, formerly with the New York Times and author of Free Lunch. Well, I suppose the fact that they are that brazen and that they're prepared to tip their hand and make it so clear to the world and anybody that's paying attention that Ryan and these right-wing Republicans are the whores and hirelings of the most powerful people in this country, the oligarchs and the corporate plutonomy. So that's the real power grab. So it's not as if Ryan, he's an ideologue, but the people he works for are the people who really want to completely lock up and control America. And that would be my target. And I'm just wondering if anybody is putting those people up on the wall as a target, because they're running the show. Ryan's just a hireling, surely.
Well, Ryan actually comes from a well-to-do family. He's from Janesville, Wisconsin, not exactly one of the big wealthy centers of America, but in the world of Janesville, his family are plutocrats. And so he actually is very representative of the ideas that he's putting forward. And my point is that if you're going to have change, people have to have some way to understand it in a way that makes sense to them. That was part of the genius of FDR, who went through this transformation in his life after he had polio that led him to suddenly realize there were all of these desperately poor people around who were being oppressed by the system and had no opportunity, and to become a traitor to his class. And people could gravitate to that. They could understand that. In the same way that Ronald Reagan, love him or hate him, Ronald Reagan changed America. That's why we're having this conversation today. He put us on a completely different path from where we were going, and Reagan did that by figuring out how to communicate with ordinary people. And I just think that what Governor Walker and in Wisconsin with the collective bargaining, Governor Snyder in Michigan with raising taxes more on the poor than on the rich and getting rid of collective bargaining in this police state. We can go into any local government and just declare it insolvent and take it over. And Governor Kasich, who is a national figure already in Ohio, on the same issues, plus some other states, have done, when combined with the Ryan plan, is just, you'd have to be willfully blind not to grasp what it is that they're doing.
Well, I suppose in a way I'm beating a dead horse here, David K. Johnson, trying to figure out what motivates these people like Ryan. And going back to Ronald Reagan, who you mentioned, I guess at the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether Reagan believed the sunny, optimistic parables that he told, where the greatest challenge to America is to take the handcuffs off the welfare queens.
Right.
I mean, take the handcuffs off the millionaires and put them on the welfare queens. And it doesn't matter whether Ryan is acting on behalf of the Koch brothers or whether he is a latter-day Marie Antoinette who wants them to let them eat cake. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't suppose it really matters.
Well, but Ian, actually, you know, here's something that's very revealing about Ryan, and there's a whole group of people here, Ryan, Greenspan, and the others. They're all of them, to some degree, acolytes of Ayn Rand. Now, it's important to understand what Ayn Rand and her works are really about. This is a novelist who denounced all forms of socialism, I mean, the most mildest possible thing you could think of, as outrageous, even though she was on Social Security and got Medicare for her cancer surgery when she was old. Let's forget the hypocrisy. Her book, that Congressman Ryan makes every one of his staff members read her book, The Fountainhead.
Mm-hmm.
The Fountainhead is the story of an architect who believes that he has the right to blow up a building because the people who commissioned him to design the building didn't follow his design. Now, I'm sorry, in my book, that's a criminal act. I think some people might think that's a terrorist act. It's one that puts lives in danger to satisfy the ego of this individual artist. And this is the kind of thinking that people like Congressman Ryan believe in. They believe other people don't matter. They believe that their egos justify anything they want to do. They are inherently antisocial. And, you know, remember what Milton Friedman once said, and Margaret Thatcher said a version of the same thing. We're not a society. We're just a lot of people who share the same geography.
Well, yeah, there's no such thing as society, she said.
Right.
So Ayn Rand, of course, was out here in Hollywood, and she was a failed screenwriter who was very bitter about the talented screenwriters who were getting all the work and helped start the Purges, the House of Un-American Activities, then created these acolytes. Of course, she was motivated by the fact that she had spent time in the Soviet Union and seen, you know, Stalin and Lenin, their work up close. But what about Greenspan and all these people? I mean, I guess, and Reagan too, who believed that Hollywood was the greatest danger in Hollywood were a bunch of leftist writers. I mean,
well, Alan Greenspan was, of course, the number one acolyte of Ayn Rand.
He was an executive of her estate.
That's right, and we put him in charge of our economy, and we watched him do something you're not supposed to do in the Fed, which was bend the economy to the political interests of one party. So my underlying point is, you know, we want to have a better society. You know, the preamble to the Constitution says the whole reason for that Constitution is to form a more perfect union, domestic tranquility, to make us a better people, to have liberty and freedom and to accomplish things. And the people who have been undermining this have gotten away with it for a long time, but now they've played their hand. They've displayed who they really are. And they're people who they're interested in themselves. I mean, what kind of morality says we're going to take from old sick people so that rich people can have more? I mean, I can tell you what the Bible says about that, and I'm not a religious person, but I've studied religion a great deal. It has a word for this. You can find it all throughout the Old Testament and the New. Evil.
Right. Well, and also the Bible talks about the money changers and how they were swept from the temple. So the Ryan, of course, though, I know we're not talking about taxes, but we're really talking about what's at the heart of the deep unfairness in this country. Is that,
yes, but taxes are the means by which we distribute the burden of government.
Right.
And we distribute benefits. They are the single biggest activity in America. It's about more than a third of the entire economy. Nothing else is as big as taxes. If you were coming here, Ian, as the journalist from the planet, you know, Planet Nine, as a sociologist, you would report back, well, the number one economic activity in the world is taxes, by far.
Well, but in terms of I'm adding to the Ryan discourse here, because the thing that's extraordinary is this guy's trying to sell this draconian bill of goods, but at the same time, he's the guy that voted for these two unfunded wars. I'm not sure what his vote was on the TARP bailout for Wall Street. I think he went along with it, but I know that he also voted in favor of the prescription drug bill, which, of course, was one of the most egregious pieces of pork, where the government was even...
Unbelievable ripoff of the taxpayer.
Exactly. So,
And Ryan did vote for TARP. Ryan voted for TARP.
Well, there you have it. I mean, and this guy's telling everybody they got to tighten their belts except him and his country club friends?
Right. I mean, that's my point, is that this is... It's been hard to get people to understand this, but look what happened in Wisconsin when all of a sudden the police recognized that while they were exempted from the elimination of collective bargaining rights, they got it immediately that once it was them and the firemen, they would just be picked off later. And the people who've been there with the demonstrators, I have not been there, but I've talked to people who have, you know, they talk about how the cops were so helpful and friendly, and the Dane County Sheriff said, you know, I'm not running a palace guard for the governor. It woke people up. It made them suddenly realize what's happening. And now you're hearing these protests all over about, well, why do public workers get these benefits? I don't know. I want to save taxes. And the point to get is to a discussion that says, yes, you should be asking yourself why you don't have those benefits. Why is it that we got rid of them in the private sector, and what does that tell you? And the redistribution of wealth and income upwards is being driven by the government's tax and spend policies.
Right, and the one thing just in the last minute that we haven't talked about is not just Ryan's social Darwinism going back to trying to create a perfect Ayn Rand world here in the 21st century. The big corporations who do fund the Republican Party and to a lesser extent the Democratic Party, they don't pay taxes either. Look at General Electric.
Yes. In fact, I have a column that's at tax.com about the taxes of GE versus the New York Times Company. And by the measure GE would prefer to use, a simple measure called cash paid for taxes, for the last decade, GE has paid 11.8% of its profits in taxes, that income taxes. That's about one-third the actual rate. The New York Times Company, a much, much smaller company, paid 71%. Now, the statutory rate's only 35%. How did that happen? Because tax law says the New York Times can't deduct a whole bunch of expenses, more than $1 billion worth that it spent to acquire the Boston Globe. GE goes and spends $73,000 per senator and congressman to get tax laws written to benefit GE. And you won't find any tax law that says for GE. They've pieced together pieces that they understand how they work in the tax code. And once in a while, somebody like me, usually working from a tip, sometimes by serendipity, can say, wait a minute, what's this and who does this benefit, and tie it back to GE. So they get special privileges you and I don't get because, like Congressman Ryan, they're special and you don't count.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today on Tax Deadline Day, David K. Johnston.
Ian, thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with David K. Johnston, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, formerly with the New York Times. He teaches at Syracuse University College of Law and writes columns for Tax Notes and The Nation, and has uncovered so many tax dodges that he's been called the de facto chief tax enforcement officer of the United States. He's also the author of the bestsellers Perfectly Legal and Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. We're going to take a brief station break and we're joined in the studio by William Cohan, the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World.
Now don't ask me what it's for. If you don't want to pay, pay some more. 'cause I'm the tax man.